The Bible in 20 minutes. It might be a bumpy ride. Okay, everybody on the page. I'm going to ask for somebody to answer. What are the Holy Scriptures? And I'm going to make eye contact. Volunteers. Okay. What are the Holy Scriptures? Would somebody like to read the answer? Okay. The Holy Scriptures, commonly called the Bible, are the books of the Old and New Testaments. Other books, called the Apocrypha, are often included in the Bible. Okay. Just to give you an idea of just how complex this is, names and orders of books in the Bible point in several different traditions. And we start with the Jewish Bibles, the Torah, the prophets, the Torah, the prophets, and the writings. The Tanakh, kind of an acronym for Torah, or the prophets, the Nevi'im, and the writings, the Ketuvim. And, okay, next down, Protestant Bibles. No Apocrypha. Not that went out in the Reformation. Okay, one page over. Lots and lots and lots of books. But in a different order. Some, no Apocrypha, but everything included, the Orthodox Bible. And the Hebrew Scriptures, or Old Testament here, is still the Septuagint, which is a Greek version of the Hebrew Scriptures. Probably canonized, declared canon, which means a standard or rule. Something comes up to a certain standard or rule to be in the Scriptures. And that probably happened somewhere between the 2nd and the 1st century BCE. But no one knows exactly when. And then on the next page, we have the Catholic Bibles. Old Testament, again, books of the Apocrypha included. And the New Testament. Okay? This was a Reformation debate. And in the Council of Trent, 1546, the Roman Catholic Church said, well, we're going to have these books, they are canonical, and we're going to include them. And in the Reformation, they said, a lot of the churches said, no, we're not having them in our Bibles at all. And in England, in our Anglican tradition, 1611, they were in the Bibles. A little later on, they were removed, but they were kind of surreptitiously, kind of sneakily put in the way of the lectionary. There would be readings from certain books, and then a few years later, more books, and a few years later, more books. And finally, by the 19th century, we came to appreciate the Apocrypha, because it cast quite a bit of light on the history between the Old Testament and the New Testament, and also some of the theology. The notion of bodily resurrection and everlasting life, and some of the apostolic ideas, questions of sin, of works, of good works, of the Hebrew Bible, which books were canonical, and so on. So it's a very colorful collection of stories, but they're not necessarily just entertaining. They have some valuable lessons. Although we kind of walk the Anglican via media here, and in one of the 39 articles, number 6, I think, it says that they're examples of life, but they really don't contain any doctrine. Well, okay, but so much for that. The Old Testament, or the Hebrew Bible, typically has three sections: the Torah, or the law. And the origin of that word is interesting. It's from yara, which in a simple form is a verb meaning he throws or tosses or aims in some way, sort of like a flight of arrows. But it's not random, because in the causative sense, it means to do just that, to point in a certain direction. In other words, to teach, to guide, to instruct. And God is considered the chief teacher, and the law is considered the way of life. And so to follow the law is to live. To turn away from the law is to turn away from God, and essentially to die, spiritually, and probably physically. Okay? We have the prophets, and the prophets are quite an interesting bunch. You'll notice in some of the traditions, they're included, some of the histories are included in the prophets. I'll get to those in a minute. But the prophets are an interesting bunch of people. Anyone who says religion and politics have no place in the same discussion has not read the prophets, because the prophets are all over social justice. The only time I've ever been afraid in an Episcopal church was when we had this wonderful just senior warden and just pillar of the community, really stand-up guy, with kind of almost a basso profundo voice, who read something from Amos about, I don't want to hear any more about your ceremonies, and I don't want to hear any more about your offerings, and at the end, those wonderful lines about, let justice roll down like water and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. Okay, that was scary. Hearing it from him, I thought, oh, okay, I believe. But also, there were some really interesting concepts in the prophets, and there are some Hebrew words that sum them up very nicely. They wanted to call people to return to God. They believed that before the fall of the Northern Kingdom in 721 BCE and the fall of the Southern Kingdom in 587, that the reason all this was happening was that people had assimilated and they'd started worshiping pagan idols and they'd gotten involved in temple prostitution, fertility rites, and all kinds of stuff. And this was just contrary to everything that they were supposed to be doing and believing. But the prophets were saying, if you will, shuv. And a shuv means to turn, but it's not a pirouette. It's a 180. Turn around and go straighten up and fly right, in other words. If you will, shuv, then, and return to the Lord, then maybe this won't happen. Well, people being people, they didn't, and it did. When they call them to righteousness, to justice and righteousness, justice is mishpat, and that's just it, justice. It's pretty straightforward, but tzedakah, righteousness, has some levels of meaning. And a lot of Hebrew and Greek words have a wide range, a semantic range it's called. You can pick up a lexicon and read one word, and there'll be 55 definitions, some having to do with each other and some not. But they also have some depth. And tzedakah was righteousness. And on one level, it was conformity to an absolute standard, like this one perfect millimeter or centimeter of mercury over in a museum in Paris. That was the level one. Level two was complete integrity with our human being, with our fellow human beings. And number three was complete love and devotion to God. And that was what they were being called to. They were being called to respond to God's, I love this word, this is my favorite human word, chesed. And it means covenant loyalty. And you can say chesed, okay, but that's not chesed. Chesed is commitment with teeth. And I think it's no accident that you're going to use your teeth to say it right. Let's see, the writings, quite a varied group of books here. The histories, from Joshua on through 2 Chronicles, essentially from the conquest of Canaan on through right before Kings, right before the liberation from exile. And the Chronicles kind of reconfigures that, restates it. The Song of Solomon, a beautiful love poem. Sometimes it's ascribed to God's love for God's people, and sometimes it's sad. It's as if you read it in that context, it's as if, God reaches out and we just don't reach back, and it's sad. Beautiful, it's erotic, but it's sad in a way too. Let's see. Psalms, of course. Most of them were complaint, but there are other ones. Psalms of Trust. 23 is just such a psalm. Psalm 44 calls God on the carpet, which, if I could dare to read that around my house at home, I would have gotten in real trouble. That would have been real arrogance. And, well, maybe it is, but on the other hand, these are from a very human point of view. Mm-hmm. And they are prayers, because God wants us to be honest in our prayer life. Mm-hmm. And at one point in the Bible, and I didn't look this up, but God does instruct someone very specifically to pray honestly. and this is what the Psalms are doing. There are also Psalms of praise, Psalms of joy, and Psalms that are kind of Psalms of the one we read tonight, kind of Psalms of smite my enemies and make me rich. Okay, very wide variety of books there, and all worth reading. Proverbs. Dr. Heller said that back in the 19th century, when people learned to read or write, they would practice by writing proverbs, and hopefully building themselves, right, their moral formation was going on at the same time as their handwriting. So, okay. We've been over this, the Apocrypha, but again, it's very colorful. I think we took the right attitude to while appreciating it. It's not quite on the level of the other two. The New Testament. Any volunteers?
I'll read it.
Thank you.
The New Testament consists of books written by the people of the New Covenant under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit to set forth the life and teachings of Jesus and to proclaim the good news of the kingdom for all people.
Okay. Well,
so who wrote the answers to these questions?
Oh, in the Catechism?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah, it's a committee. Sorry. We're very Episcopalian, but there's a group of people who get together.
No, I'm just asking who wrote it.
Okay. Well, whoever wrote it, and it probably was a committee.
Yeah, there's committees that put together sort of the creedal thoughts of the church outside of the Nicene and Apostles Creed. These are sort of just creedal thoughts.
I think they did a very nice job of making it succinct, but readable. Okay. The New Testament. The Gospels are the first books in the New Testament, but the first ones written were actually the epistles. Some were written by Paul, definitely. We have a list of the, undisputed Pauline epistles. We have some that, for example, Romans, 1 Thessalonians, 1 and 2 Corinthians, Philemon, Galatians. I'm probably leaving something out. But Colossians and Ephesians and 2 Thessalonians, maybe not, but and then the pastoral epistles, 1 and 2 Timothy and Titus, probably not. They were written later, and the subject matter, not really. Let's see. The Gospels, of course, there were four, and you've seen that cartoon on Facebook with Jesus sitting there saying to someone, "Now, I want you to get this right because I don't want four versions of this getting out there." And in the early church, there were more than four. There were lots of Gospels floating around until the canon was set in about 367. And the first list appeared in about 382. And then the first Bible that looks like the Bible today, the Septuagint, the Old Testament, was, I think, 395. So, right then. There's, of course, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We're reading Mark. Mark is probably the earliest gospel. It's certainly the shortest. And theory is that Matthew and Luke drew on Mark and added from a source called Q, or Kenna, I guess, meaning source in German, and source of sayings. But they had their own theology and their own message they wanted to send. They're also the only two Gospels with an infancy narrative. Nothing in Mark, nothing in John. So this is where we get the wonderful Christmas stories. The first three, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, we call the Synoptic Gospels. John is different, just very different. John, I think of as the theological gospel. One of the sources I consulted said, you notice that Jesus speaks in rather succinct paragraphs or sentences in the other Gospels, and in John he goes on and on in beautiful long sermons. And I also think it's interesting that in the Synoptic Gospels, Jesus gets in trouble. Just really, the straw that breaks the camel's back is the cleansing of the temple, upsetting the tables. And that's what starts his ministry in John, and what gets him in real trouble is raising Lazarus. And he knows that he's going to be killed when he goes back to raise Lazarus. But it's turned on its head. The epistles, of course, let's see, a lot of them are, well, they're, in Dr. Smith's class, he did a rhetorical analysis of every one, because Paul usually had a point to make. In 1 Corinthians, it's like he's running an adult daycare center. Galatians, Council of Jerusalem, I believe, that I opposed Cephas with Peter to his face, whether you had to become Jewish in order to become a Christian. And it goes on and on. Then there are other epistles, James, 1 and 2 Timothy, and let's see, Hebrews. Titus was back in one of the pastoral epistles.
Yeah. I don't know them all in order. I'm thinking Colossians, Philippians. Those are all in there.
Well, Colossians is one of the disputed ones.
That's right.
It's
sort of one of the iffy ones.
But there are other epistles written, and the ones by the Johannine epistles were written probably by an elder in the church. And in response to some controversy, it's the false teachers who were going around. Well, one of them, the first one, was saying that Jesus just sort of appeared. It just appeared to suffer, the Docetist controversy. And they were saying, no, Christ was here in the flesh. And then, Revelation. Okay. There are people, my husband among them, who wish that Revelation and Daniel had not been admitted to the canon because they're apocalyptic. And sometimes people take that time as relating to this time, and it's not. An apocalyptic book is written because things are so bad that everything, there's no hope of transformation. Everything has to be restored de novo, really. A new heaven and a new earth. And anyone who says that, okay, the book of Revelation says that on Thanksgiving Day 2016, Jesus is coming back. No, it doesn't. They didn't. In Father Roper's words, they didn't think we'd be here. So that's basically it. I have, well, I guess two questions. Dr. Heller starts his Old Testament class every year by quoting John Robinson, who addressed the Plymouth, the Pilgrim sailing from Holland to Plymouth Colony, the Mayflower, and he said, here we go, "I am verily persuaded the Lord hath more truth yet to break forth from his holy word." Okay. The questions are, what, if any, truths have broken forth for you? Has more than one at a different time broken forth from the same passage? And two, is there any certain passage you just don't like at all? You just have a real tough time with? I had an assignment in Dr. Smith's class to choose one of four passages and write a paper. This was our major paper for the semester. And I chose the one about women not speaking in the church because that would just really be tough for me. So I chose that. And I followed the instructions and I wrote the paper and I turned it in. And I was ecstatic. I got an A-. That was more than I expected. Because I was still waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning saying, why was that even included? That's so offensive. Why was it even included in the Bible? Well, some months later, I called Dr. Smith after class and said, there were two of those passages that I didn't like at all. And one of them I wrote on, and I'm still waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning and wanting to throw something. And I said, was that deliberate? And he said, they were all like that, and they were that way by design. Because he wanted us to realize that we were going to have to encounter not only the things we want to see in the Bible and get from the Bible, but the Bible is a very human book. It's a cooperative effort. And he wanted us to know and to be prepared for some things that were going to be kind of hard to handle. And the best answer I heard, but everybody has a different way of doing this. Dr. Heller was asked by a student in the Old Testament who had just had it with the patriarchs. Abraham tried to pass Sarah off as his sister and Jacob and the whole thing, and she said, "I have just had it with these patriarchs. What do you do when you read this?" And he said, "Well, like Jacob at the Jabbok, I wrestle and I come up blessed." So everybody has a way of wrestling and a way of coming up blessed. So that's one of the questions. And if you don't have to wrestle, that's the other one. Thank you.